Thank you so much, Kairos, for making this past hour a very peaceful and unstressful hour for me. I really appreciate it. And now it is Regina Dawn Akers, so you're up.
Hello. Yeah, I especially love that last song, Kairos. If you could let me know who that was and the name of the song, I'd appreciate it. That was a gorgeous song. I'd like to add it to my playlist, the Stay Awake song. Maybe that was the name of it, Stay Awake. But who? The Celtic Women. All right. I'm writing that down now, and that is going to be added to my playlist. I loved it. A Celtic woman. That's right, not women, woman. I've been corrected on that before. Thank you very much. That was a lovely song. All right, everyone, happy Sunday evening. This will be my last Sunday evening teaching for a while. Lynn, I know that you know that. Both Lynns. I was actually speaking to L-I-N, because she is the admin now, but L-Y-N. Also knows, the entire month of November, I am not going to be doing any teaching. I'm going to be traveling to India for the first 3 weeks. And then in the last week of November, I'm going to go ahead and rest. Usually when I get back, there's a pretty strong, jet lag that lasts for a few days. But then there's also a lot of emails and lots of things that got backed up while I'm gone. So I'm going to take the entire month of November off from what I call the public life, which means I won't be in Pal Talk or teaching any classes or anything like that. And then I'll be back on December 1, the very first Sunday in December, and I'll start everything, all of my regular duties again, December 1. And in fact, I'll be here. I'll be the minister for the Awakening Together service on December 1. So I'll be here in that morning and also in that afternoon. I just want to check, make sure you all can still hear me. I just had some pop-ups and my screen now looks different. Can anybody hear me? Lost mic. Okay. All right, I went out, came back in. Are you able to hear me now? Yes, okay, good. Thank you very much, Deb Gary. All right, perfect. It seems like that happens to me a lot more now, where right after I start speaking, there'll be a pop-up and then I lose the mic. It's kind of funny. It only appears to happen right after I start speaking, so hopefully it won't happen again. All right, so we are here tonight for the teachings of Inner Ramana, and we're in the middle of a message. The message that I was reading last week is called How to Awaken from the Dream. The message begins on page 53 of the teachings of Inner Ramana. And the very first paragraph said, "Today I would like to talk to you about expectations and imagination, and help you to see that expectations are imagination, so you may choose to relinquish all expectations as mere foolishness." And from that, Inner Ramana went into, "I have already told you that I cannot tell you of yourself, and yet you want to continue to speak about the self and talk about what the self is." So what Inner Ramana immediately went into were our expectations about awakening. That's the expectations that are directly being addressed here. And probably all of us have to admit that at one time or another, if not still now, we had ideas about what awakening is and about what awakening isn't. We also have ideas about who is awake, who isn't awake. Often there's even ideas about if I perceive a person in a body, then that person cannot be awake because I perceive them in a body. Of course, there's a misunderstanding there, and that we don't realize we're talking about my perception. We're not talking about that person's perception. But you know, we do have these ideas and we have these expectations. And so Inner Ramana is asking us to realize that our expectations are pure imagination. In fact, let me just read the first paragraph again with the realization that this is the primary topic that Ramana is talking about, is our expectations about what awakening or enlightenment is. Today, I would like to talk to you about expectations and imagination and help you to see that expectations are imagination, so you may choose to relinquish all expectations as mere foolishness. So all of our ideas about what awakening is or isn't, all of our ideas about what enlightenment is or isn't, all of our ideas about what I will experience if I am awake, and all of our ideas about how someone else should act if they are awake. We're being asked to let go of all of those ideas as pure foolishness because they're coming from our imagination. So that's just kind of a review of what we looked at last week, so that we can start right in the middle of the message this week, and you'll be all set. You'll be in step with what the message is talking about. We're starting today on page 57, in the middle of the message, a little past the middle, but still, page 57. And on page 57, you'll see a comment from the questioner. So that's where we begin tonight. You've asked us not to talk about or think about the self. And the teacher says, I've asked you to question the I that is talking about or thinking about the self. Now, one thing that's really interesting about this is, even though I'm sitting there live as the scribe listening to this message, my wrong mind is already beginning to warp what I heard very, very, very quickly. So if we go back and look at this message, if we look at the second paragraph on page 53, I'm going to read this paragraph to you. I have already told you that I cannot tell you of yourself. I cannot. And yet you want to continue to speak of the self and talk about what the self is. You want to say that you know when someone is truly abiding in self and when he is not. You want to speak of your experiences with self and say, I have some taste of the experience of self. But I would ask you to stop and look at this discussion of self and this asking about self, and this sharing of what I know about self, and ask, who is the I that is thinking about self, making decisions about self, and agreeing or disagreeing on what self is? You see, that's a pretty clear direction. Inner Ramana is not saying in that paragraph, I ask you to quit talking about self. And Ramana is not saying in that paragraph, you know, I ask you to quit thinking about self. And Ramana is saying, when you notice that you are talking about self, or you notice that you are thinking about self, stop and ask, who is the I that is talking about or thinking about self? And yet, I twisted that in my mind so that I heard, you're not supposed to talk about self. You're not supposed to think about self. You're not supposed to wonder about self. And that's just not what was said. Again, what was said was, when you notice you are talking about self, when you notice you are thinking about self, when you notice you are wondering what self is, stop and ask, who is the I that is talking or thinking or wondering, right? So again, if we go back to the comment from the questioner on page 57, notice I said, you've asked us not to talk about or think about self. You see how that got twisted in my mind? You've asked us not to. That wasn't the instruction at all. It kind of makes me wonder how often a very clear teaching is being given, right? A very clear teaching is being given, and our mind slightly distorts it just enough to make it not helpful, right? It's kind of an interesting question. I know that it actually happens quite a lot because sometimes people will tell me what they heard me say. They'll say, well, you said yada, yada, yada. And I know that I didn't say that because I know, you know, what's in my heart. I know what I feel. I know what I think and I know what I speak. And so I'll know that that is a distortion of what was said rather than what was actually said. So this is something that we can all really be aware of, that sometimes even in our listening or probably in our reading as well, there's a distortion that occurs so that we aren't always hearing the pure teaching. And I think that probably if we want to start, you know, how do we catch ourselves? How do we catch ourselves when we don't hear purely? And in fact, this is one of the things, and some of you have read the book, The Most Rapid Means to Eternal Bliss by Michael Langford. And you know that Michael Langford asks us to read each line in the book very slowly at least 3 times before continuing. So if you've followed Michael's advice and read his book the way he asks us to, you really learn that book pretty well because you're reading it so slowly and so many times. And we know that this is the one of the things he warns us about. He warns us that the ego in our mind is going to distort what we are reading. And so he asks us to be very, very careful not to add to any of the sentences or not to distort any of the sentences, to accept each of the sentences that he has written exactly as he has written. And so it's something that we all need to be very careful about. But also I think that there's a way that we can check within ourselves to see if our mind has distorted what we've heard or what we've read. All of the teachings that come from wisdom have a feeling of helpfulness and a feeling of lightness to them. And sometimes you might even use the word hope. At some point, the word hope no longer applies, but at some point, the word hope applies. Like you hear this teaching and there may be a sense of, oh, if I do that, that may be helpful and that may feel like a hope. There's also something in the teaching that it makes sense. I have never heard a clear teaching that didn't make sense. Oh, it makes sense that if I practice that, you know, I can expect a specific result. You know, like if I practice letting go of judgment thoughts, if really when a thought comes into my mind, I look at it and I say, oh, that's a judgment thought. I realize with my heart I don't want a judgment thought and I let go of it. If I practice that consistently, then someday there will be less judgment thoughts showing up in the mind because every thought you believe recycles, right? But if you're believing less and less, then there's going to be less and less. It just makes sense. So all spiritual teachings, you know, they can give you, they have a light in them. They have a lightness in them. They point upward. There'll be, might be a sense of hope and they make sense, right? These are kind of the characteristics. Something in you recognizes that is helpful. These are kind of the characteristics of wisdom teachings. If the mind distorts a wisdom teaching, it's going to have a heavier feel about it. It's going to have more of a burden about it. There'll be a judgment about you or about the teaching or about the teacher. You know, it's going to have ego characteristics around it instead of what we call spirit characteristics. So if someone is teaching, for example, a particular type of meditation, and maybe let's say that what they're teaching is what we call concentration, and they're teaching you to focus on your breath, or they're teaching you to focus on a mantra, right? But they're teaching you to be concentrated. there is a purpose for concentration. And the purpose for concentration is what I would call mind training. It's really useful for someone who's just used to following their mind anywhere it goes and believing anywhere it says. Concentration is a period of time where you are not following your mind. You're learning to be still through the use of watching a breath or practicing a mantra. Or I've heard that sometimes people focus on like the third eye in the middle of the forehead. But it's a practice of learning to be still, which helps you to not just go so quickly with the mind and follow the mind wherever it goes. So it's a tool, right? And for people who know that they follow their mind no matter where it goes, they can see the usefulness of that tool. And it's not an end-all, right? But it has a helpfulness for a period of time. And so there's an eagerness about practicing this if you realize that that you need this particular discipline at this time because you're far too tolerant of mind wandering, as Jesus says. But the distortion of that is if you're bad if you can't stay concentrated. You're bad if every time you try to concentrate, you end up following thoughts again. And when that distortion gets in there, that you're bad if you aren't perfect at this immediately, then the same teaching, which is helpful, becomes heavy, right? There's a distortion in it. So one thing we can do when we listen to teachings is we can look at how is this really making me feel? Is this feeling like, that makes sense? Is there something in me that recognizes that? Can I see how that might be helpful for me now? Or even not for me now, can I see how that would be helpful for certain people in certain places? Can I see how that's a helpful teaching? Is this a light? Is it maybe even hopeful? Or is it heavy? Does it feel impossible? Do I feel a judgment on myself? That's a distortion, right? It means the teaching was not heard accurately. It doesn't mean it was a bad teaching necessarily. Of course, a distorted teaching can be given too, but it could be a pure teaching, but it got distorted in the mind. And that's what happened here in the teachings of Inner Ramana. When Inner Ramana was teaching me something very simple and very helpful, when you start wondering about the self and thinking you know what awakening is or enlightenment is, or you know how an awakened person should act, just ask yourself, who is the I that's thinking this? Right? That's a very light teaching. And instead, I turned it into, we're not supposed to think about the self. We're not supposed to talk about the self. It got very heavy. Like I turned it into something that I could never do. A distortion. All right, so let me just go ahead and return to the message. I think we all understand how we distort, and hopefully we understand how we can recognize if our mind is distorting what we're hearing. And again, Michael Langford's book is really good at pointing that out. If you haven't read Michael Langford's book and you think reading something like that would be helpful, I recommend it. I've read it twice. I'm not interested. I have not found in myself a true interest in meditating 12 hours a day, which is one of the things he recommends, or even 2 hours a day. But I have found it helpful to read his book twice in the way that he recommends, one sentence at a time, three times before going to the next sentence. That practice itself has been very, very helpful to me. So the name of his book, again, is The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. You can find it free online if you do search for it. You can also purchase it from Amazon as a paperback book. All right, so comment from the questioner. You've asked us not to talk about or think about the self. Inner Ramana. I've asked you to question the I that is talking about or thinking about the self. When you are imagining that you know what abiding in self is, or when you imagine that you know what stillness is, or what surrender is, or what now is like, you block the experience of what it really is by judging it. Your expectations, which has come from your imagination, become criteria that you believe in, then you do not allow the experience to be, or do not let the guidance be? Because you have already decided that it must be something else. So again, one reason that Inner Ramana is asking us to question, you know, who is thinking about the self? Who believes it knows what awakening looks like? Or, you know, what thinks that it knows what one who is enlightened will act like? The reason Inner Ramana is asking us to ask this self-inquiry question is that we'll, so that we'll notice it's the mind. And then our own wisdom within us will probably realize, well, could the mind possibly know what awakening is? Could the mind possibly know how an awakened one will act? Of course the mind cannot know that. And when we see that it's really the mind that's doing this thinking and imagining and setting these expectations, and we realize that the mind couldn't possibly know the truth of it, then that allows us to detach from the expectation or the imagination. As Inner Ramana is saying, if we don't detach from the expectation or the imagination, we're actually clinging to what the Course would call blocks to love's presence. We miss the actual experience itself because of the ideas about it that we have attached to. And of course, I don't think any of us want to do that. We don't want to, you know, miss the actual experience because of ideas that we believe about it. So this is a helpful, hopeful teaching, right? If whenever we notice, there we go, there I go again, thinking, you know, gosh, if Muji was awake, he wouldn't eat meat, you know? Maybe I think that all awake people are vegetarians. And if Muji was awake, then he wouldn't eat meat. And I start deciding within myself, he must not be awake then, you know? And then I, wait a minute, who is the I that's thinking this? Who is the I that's making these decisions, right? Ah, it's the mind. But does the mind know what awake is? No, of course not. Then all I do is detach from my ideas. Now I'm letting go of my idea that Muji couldn't be awake. I'm not deciding whether he is or isn't. I'm letting go of my ideas about it at all. I'm letting go of my ideas about it in either direction. It's not about reversing my decision. It's not about changing my mind. Oh, I was wrong. He's not awake. He is awake. That's still another idea. It's about letting go of my ideas about it completely. How could I know what awake is, right? How could I know what awake is? And this opens up the space, and it's the space that is needed in order for the experience to be realized here. All of the ideas, all of the decisions are blocks to the experience being realized here. So again, this isn't about making right decisions. This is about making no decision. This is about realizing the mind can't know yes or no. So I let go of any thoughts that the mind has about it, and I stay open in I don't know-ness, right? I don't know. I stay open. How could the mind know? All right, so when you are imagining that you know what abiding in self is, or when you imagine that you know what stillness is, or what surrender is, or what now is like, you block the experience of what it really is by judging it. Your expectations, which have come from your imagination, become criteria that you believe in. Then you do not allow the experience to be, or do not let the guidance be, because you have already decided that it must be something else. I ask you to drop all expectations and let the guidance or experience of the current moment be what you are not told through thinking or imagining to expect. This is what I mean when I say listen only to me. I mean let go of attachment to the thinking and remembering and judging and imagining mind. This kind of reminds me of something in NTI. I believe it's in NTI Acts. NTI Acts talks about the rules of the world. And of course, there really are no consistent rules in the world. You know, the rules of the world really depend on what culture you were raised in, even what family you were raised in. You know, the rules that I was taught about how to maintain a household, how to be in a family, are different than the rules that other people in other families are taught, right? So the rules of the world are really just the rules of our individual, and I do mean individual culture. You know, I have different rules of the world than you do. But in NTIX, it talks about how one of the things we need to let go of are the rules of the world. That any rules that we have, we will then judge based on. So, for example, if I have a rule that friends are supposed to call me at least once a month. If you're a good friend, you'll call me at least once a month, right, on the phone, and we'll chat. If I have this rule, because that's the kind of culture I was raised in, my mom's friends always called her, right? And then I have a friend who doesn't call, right? Now I have an upset. I have a grievance. I may even perceive this person to not be a friend. But the decisions that I'm making are based on my rules of the world. Well, what NTIX teaches is that in order to really be open to what we call Holy Spirit, in order to be really open to guidance, we have to let go of the rules of the world. We have to let go of all of them. Because any rules we have, we're going to make decisions based on that rule. You know, I'm going to call my friend once a month because I think I have to. And I'm going to get upset when my friend doesn't call me because I think she was supposed to. And there's no checking for guidance going on anywhere, right? That's how we live by rules. Winner Ramana is basically saying the same thing here. You need to let go of all of your expectations. You need to let go of all of your rules. You need to let go of all of your ideas about how things are supposed to be. Not only about awakening, but about everything. Because if you don't let go of your rules, your behavior, your acting, right, your deciding, your decision making, your thinking is going to be based on your rules instead of based on guidance. So if you really want to be led by guidance, and many of us say that we do, if you really want to be led by guidance, then you need to see and let go of all of your rules. Because every single rule is a block to guidance. So returning to Inner Ramana. Do not think about what I have just said. Do not even think about who has said it. To think is to believe that you are the I in thought. And that I separates itself from everything it defines and thinks about. Now, this teaching that we have to let go of the rules of the world, or really the rules that we believe about the world, this teaching is, you know, this is not the first time you've heard it, I'm sure. It's not only in Inner Ramana and nowhere else. This is a very common spiritual teaching, right? But it's also a teaching that we tend to think about. You know, you'll hear people ask questions like, well, what about the rule of monogamy? You know, what about that rule? Or what about the rule of, you know, we're supposed to teach our children right from wrong or keep our children safe? What about the rule that we're supposed to stop at a stop sign? You know, we start at, am I supposed to not stop at a stop sign unless I feel guidance to stop at a stop sign? Okay, when we start thinking about this and we start leading ourselves into confusion. Notice what Inner Ramana says. Do not think about what I have just said. Why is Inner Ramana asking us not to think about it? Because the thinking comes from the mind. And the mind is not wisdom. If we just listen to this teaching without any thinking, we get it. You know, we get it. We get it that you have to let go of the rules that you live by in order to be led by guidance. If you don't let go of the rules you live by, you're going to be led by the rules. We get that instantly. But if we start thinking about it, thinking is confusion. And the thinking takes us away from the getting immediately that we had. And the thinking, yeah, balls everything up. And pretty soon we're thinking, well, do I stop at stop signs? That's a rule, you know, or do I have to wait until I feel a guidance to stop at the stop? You know, we get into craziness, and we get into craziness because we thought about it. Our problem is that we think our thinking is our wisdom. When our thinking is not our wisdom, our thinking is our confusion. So Inner Ramana has just given us a wisdom teaching, and it is known that this wisdom teaching is understood immediately. We all get it. We have to let go of the rules if we want to follow guidance. We all get it. And then his very next instruction is, do not think about what I have just said. Right? Don't think about it. Because if you think about it, you're going to lose the clarity that you have in this moment. Again, I talked a little bit ago about how our mind distorts the teachings. But if we just accept the teachings without thinking about them, there's no opportunity for them to be distorted. They're distorted through our thinking. The next paragraph. The mind is always trying to not be here now. That is because I am here now. Truth is here now. That is also because the ego is dependent on script making for survival. Since the ego is not real, it must be made to be experienced. You make the ego through script making, through imagining, which is thinking about the past and the future and circumstances which are not real. All right, so it's kind of funny because in our spiritual discussions, we often have a teaching that talks about the ego as if it's something, you know, like, you know, the ego is going to distort the teaching, right? That's a type of sentence. It makes it sound like the ego is something. The ego is going to distort the teaching. And then at the same time, we have teachings that tell us the ego is nothing. It is not real. And again, if we think about that, we'll get confused on that point. We'll think one has to be right and one has to be wrong. So if it's true that the ego is nothing, then it's not true that the ego distorts the teaching. Because how can nothing distort the teaching? Well, the truth is, it's not that one statement is true and the other statement is false. Both statements are true. Both statements are true, but you need to understand a little more about what the ego is. The ego is nothing. The ego has no existence. The ego could be called an illusion, or the ego could be called a smoke screen. But if you've ever experienced any kind of an illusion, right, then you know that an illusion has an appearance of being something real. For example, when a magician, you know, does a great illusion and makes it appear that someone disappears who was there a moment ago, there's the appearance that it's real. So one of the things you need to ask is, where does this appearance of an ego come from if there is no ego, right? Where does the appearance come from? And the answer that Ramana is giving us right now is the appearance of the ego comes from your thinking. That's what makes the ego appear to be. So if you are thinking all of the time, which most of us are, if you're thinking about the past and thinking about the future and thinking about the teaching, there is an appearance of an ego. And to pretend like there's no ego when there's an appearance of an ego isn't exactly helpful. Because the truth is, you need to be aware of the appearance in order to not to continue to fall into the thinking. So I need to be aware, for example, that the ego distorts teachings. Or, said another way, I need to be aware that if I think about a teaching, I will likely lose the wisdom, or the wisdom will somehow be distorted. The longer I think about it, the more I'm going to be moved away from the core of the teaching. So I want to be aware that the ego distorts teachings. But at the same time, I want to be aware about how this ego that distorts teachings comes about. It comes about through thinking. If there was no thinking, there could be no appearance of an ego. Just like if there was no magician, there could be no appearance of a woman disappearing on stage. So I need to be aware that thinking is kind of like a machine. You can imagine a machine that's cranking out a fog, and that fog is the ego. Now, the moment the machine quits cranking, the fog dissipates, and it's clear that there is no ego, there never was an ego, right? Right? It was just an illusion. But you can't say it's an illusion and keep cranking the machine too. So one thing we have to learn is, how is this appearance, how is this illusion of an ego coming about? It comes about through our thinking. Our thinking about the past, our thinking about the future, our thinking about the spiritual teachings, our thinking about what self is, our thinking about what enlightenment is, right? This is cranking the machine that makes the appearance of an ego. Now listen very carefully to what Inner Ramana says again. The mind is always trying to not be here now. That is because I am here now. Truth is here now. That is also because the ego is dependent on script making for survival. Script making and thinking are the same thing. Since the ego is not real, it must be made to be experienced. You make the ego through script making, through imagining, which is thinking about the past and the future and circumstances which are not real. Here and now, without thinking, is death to the ego because it is not script making. Now, the word death sometimes scares some people. But that, again, is coming through a distortion of the teaching. When people hear about the death of the ego, or they hear about destroying the ego, and then they get all nervous about those teachings, and they say, I don't like those teachings that say the ego dies, it doesn't die. I don't like those teachings that talk about destroying the ego. The reason they don't like the teachings is because they're hearing it through a distortion. If you stay with the clarity is the ego is nothing, right? The ego has to be made. Again, imagine a machine that you have to keep cranking that machine in order to have this fog called the ego. And the minute you quit cranking the machine, the fog evaporates or dies or ends. And there's no ego because there really never was an ego, right? That's all this is talking about. It's not anything you need to be afraid of. Where the distortion comes from is if I believe that I am the ego, right? If I believe that I am the ego or some very valuable part of me is the ego, then I really don't like these ideas, destroy the ego, right? I don't like these ideas, death to the ego. But that's not what I am. You know, NTI Luke says something about, you know, at some point during the process of awakening, we will become afraid because we will believe that we have to die or destroy ourselves in order to live forever. And then NTI says nothing could be further from the truth. And the reason NTI says nothing could be further from the truth is not because the ego is not going to die, because the ego is going to die or end or fade or cease to be. It's because we're not the ego. I am not going to die. I am not going to end or cease to be, right? I'm not the ego. I've never been the ego. I will never be the ego. What I am is separate from the ego or different from the ego, right? But as long as the ego is such a thick, thick, thick fog, through thinking, because I keep cranking that machine and I have a very heavy, thick fog, I can't even see myself. In fact, this is one reason for the types of meditation I was talking about earlier, concentration. If I'm concentrated on a mantra for 15 minutes a day or 20 minutes a day, or even if I'm concentrated on my breathing or concentrated on my third eye, and I'm learning not to follow my mind wandering, I'm learning to stay with the concentration, do you know what happens? For that 15 or 20 minutes, I'm not cranking the machine. And guess what happens if I'm not cranking the machine? The fog may not completely go away. Again, we're talking about 15 or 20 minutes, and I may return to my thinking as soon as my concentration ends. But the fog clears a little, like a little space in the fog shows up. And as soon as there's a little space in the fog, I get a realization of who I am, or a realization of my true wisdom. And I come out of my contemplation, or I come out of my concentration or meditation with a piece of real wisdom, which I often call my daily bread. But I never would have gotten the daily bread if I did not go into the concentration, if I did not go into the meditation or the contemplation that took me away from the thinking, right? So you see, there's a reason for spiritual practice. Because during spiritual practice, we're not cranking the thinking machine, we're not making the thick, thick fog, and we get a glimmer of ourself, or we get a glimmer of our true wisdom. And then as we embrace that wisdom and practice that wisdom, we learn to think less. We learn to crank the machine less. The fog thins more. We get stronger realization of ourself. We get a stronger sense of our own true wisdom, right? And then we learn to think less. You see how that works? It's a slowing down of the cranking that seems to happen. So here and now, without thinking, is death to the ego, because it is not script making. But death to the ego is only clarity about who we are. It's not death to us. It's just death to the fog. Right? It's not death to the blue sky. There's no such thing as death to the blue sky. But you can see the blue sky when the fog is gone. Here and now, without thinking, is death to the ego, because it is not script making. It is script living, because the script is being experienced and you seem to live within it. But script living is not script making. So, you know, we're all familiar with the Christian saying, which actually I used to think Jesus said, and I used to think it was in the Bible, but I've looked it up and it's not in the Bible and Jesus didn't say it. It's a Christian saying based on the teachings of Jesus, but Jesus never actually said it. It's to live in the world, but be not of the world, right? Live in the world, but be not of the world. And I do see the question about contemplation. I'll come back to that as soon as I finish this thought. So live in the world, but be not of the world. This is one of the primary teachings of the teachings of Inner Ramana. This is the purpose of surrender. The purpose of surrender is to live in the world and be not of the world. The purpose of surrender is to ask within myself, what am I to do now? How am I to see this? What am I to think? How am I to respond, right? We ask within, we get intuitive prompts, and we follow those intuitive prompts without questioning them or thinking about them. Why? Because if I'm living from intuitiveness, I'm not thinking, or I don't have as much need for thinking, so I'm doing less thinking, right? I'm just intuitively being guided. And when I'm intuitively being guided and I'm doing at least less thinking, there's not so much cranking of the machine going on, there's not so much fog, and I can have more and more realization of my truth and more realization of my wisdom. But to the outside observer, right, if someone is on the outside watching me, I may not look any different, except that I may be happier, I'm not as stressed, right? But I'm still doing all of the work that I would do. I'm still fulfilling my function as mother, fulfilling my function as homeowner. fulfilling my function as president minister of Awakening Together, fulfilling my function as, you know, whatever functions I have. In fact, I may appear to someone who thinks to be thinking a lot, when actually I'm just following intuition. I call it following orders, because I was in the military for 10 years, and for me it's about the same. You know, when I was in the military, I was told what to do and I did it. We were literally taught not to think about it. I didn't have the right, and with my rank, to question the order. I didn't have the right with my rank to think about, is this a, you know, should I do this? Should I not do this? Is there a better idea? Is this in my best interest? It's just, here's the order, carry it out. Well, for me, that's what following guidance is like. You know, I followed the inner order. Now, of course, I follow it out of willingness and joy. I don't feel like I'm doing anything against my will. In fact, I feel like my will is in alignment with the inner order. But I just follow orders. You know, the guidance says, you know, send this email, you know, ask this person this question. I send the email and I ask the person the question, right? It's just simple. And so this is living, right? But it's not script making, because script making comes from the thinking about, oh, should I send this email? What's this person going to think when they get this email? You know, what are they, you know, blah, 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 all this chatter about the email. That's script making. Or all this chatter about the email. That's cranking the machine and making the thick fog. Sending the email, because I felt an inner prompt to send the email, and then just moving on to the next thing without another thought about it, that is script living in the world, right? But that is not script making, because it is not thinking. So again, here and now without thinking is death to the ego, because it is not script making, it is script living. Because the script is being experienced and you seem to live within it. But script living is not script making. So here and now is certain death or ending to the artificial I that is ego. So being able to live by intuitive surrender is one way to awaken from the dream. Because we're doing less thinking. We're doing less cranking of the fog machine. Therefore, the fog is clearing. So that's the end of that particular message, which was called How to Awaken from the Dream. The next message is How to Awaken from the Dream Part 2, which typically I would go ahead and start it anyway. But since I'm not going to have time to finish it, and since I'm not going to be back for about a month, I don't want to start it. I did see a question from Willow. How do you define contemplation? And I'm very, very happy to answer that, not only with my words, but with the words of a few different people as well. And if you just wait one moment, I am actually opening up the Awakening Together website. It's awakening-together.org. And on the Awakening Together website, underneath the Interact menu, we have a menu item called Contemplation Together. I'm going to that. And on this page, we have about 5 or 6 quotes defining what contemplation is. The very first quote is from me. So these are my words of how I define contemplation, but I'm going to share the words of the other people too, because I think listening to it from all 6 of these perspectives gives a fuller idea of what contemplation is. So first, the Regina Don Acres definition. Contemplation is not thinking or trying to understand. Contemplation is silent diving into the restful, devotional, open heart of the words, and their being. Just being in the state of contemplation without seeking to understand or get answers. So you can see for me, contemplation is a non-thinking practice. And in fact, when I am contemplating a quote, and again, I dive into the word. Sometimes I dive into just one word. One word will attract me, and I dive into it, and I be still with it. If my mind starts thinking, I read the quote again. So it's a type of concentration. I'm not allowing my mind to wander. And when I practice this type of concentration, which is called contemplation, again, because I'm not thinking and the fog clears, what begins to come up is a wisdom at some point. And the wisdom, although it may come as words and I can write it out on paper, and it doesn't always come as words and I can't always write it out on paper, but sometimes it does, it's still very, very different than thinking. There's no thinking or figuring out that's happening. It's like a gift being received. It's like an aha being realized, right? It comes of its own because I was sitting in a non-thinking state of mind and the fog cleared. All right, the next definition of contemplation comes from Yoga Vasistha. And here's his definition. Abandon the words, but remain established in the experience of the truth they indicate. That supreme state is beyond all concepts. So again, you can see that Yoga Vasistha, I mean, you may be reading words in contemplation, but those words evoke something in you. And Yoga Vasistha is recommending to go into that something, that feeling, that heart that is evoked by the words rather than thinking about the words itself. Right? Go to where the words are pointing rather than thinking about the words and be there in that space that the words point to. That is contemplation. The next definition of contemplation is from Adyashanti. Contemplation is the art of holding a word or a phrase patiently in the silence and stillness of awareness until it begins to disclose deeper and deeper meanings and understandings. Contemplation has the power to transcend beyond the limits of analytical thought and logic and open consciousness up to an order of wisdom and truth that can only be described as revelation. So again, we have three different people here, but we keep hearing this same idea that contemplation is not thinking about the words. Contemplation is somehow going into some space that either the entire thought or a phrase in the thought or even one word in the thought pointed you into the space and being in that space in a non-thinking way. And again, if we're in the space in a non-thinking way, we're not cranking the fog machine. The fog gets to clear a little bit and then some kind of wisdom comes through. And something is realized, or Adyashanti calls it revelation. We didn't think it up. We didn't figure it out. And yet, here it is. I know it now. It's realized, right? The result of contemplation. The next definition is from Eckhart Tolle. The words are no more than signposts. That to which they point is not to be found within the realm of thought, but a dimension within yourself that is deeper and infinitely vaster than thought. A vibrantly alive peace is one of the characteristics of that dimension. So whenever you feel inner peace arising as you read, the written word is doing its work, fulfilling its function as your teacher. It is reminding you of who you are, and pointing the way back home. Allow it to do its work, to awaken you from the old grooves of your repetitive and conditioned thinking. So again, we have a definition of contemplation that is referring to not thinking. You know, he says, let the words, let it do its thing. That means you're doing nothing, right? You're not trying to figure out the words. You're resting with the words. You're resting in the peace or the love or the feeling that the words evoked. And then something happens without your participation. Something happens in your rest and some realization comes. The last definition that we have of contemplation on this particular page is from Magdi Imbi. And Magdi says, your contemplation has to be a naked contemplation that does not rely on any luggage from the past. A contemplation that does not rely on learned beliefs and past feelings. And sometimes, you know, I have noticed that sometimes when people are contemplating, and of course, most of the people that I know are course students, so I notice this most with course ideas, although I'm sure if I was in Buddhism, I would notice this with Buddhist ideas. But I notice that sometimes when people are contemplating, or they say that they're contemplating, what they write is almost exactly word for word from the course. And what you can tell is that a mental learned idea is showing up instead of their true contemplation. Usually, whenever we contemplate something very, very deeply and we express it, the expression is completely individual. It's amazing. But if you study all of the masters, you will notice Ramana's voice does not sound like Jesus's voice, does not sound like Buddha's voice, does not sound like Nisargadatta's voice, does not sound like Supreme Yoga's voice. Everyone who has gone into clear realization has their own voice. Regina Dawn Akers, when she is coming from that wisdom, that deep, deep wisdom, there's her voice. Muji, I have a book over here of Muji's writings from his personal contemplation. He has his contemplation voice that is different than even his teaching voice, right? I'm certain it's different from his personality voice. When wisdom comes up within us, it has a uniqueness about it. So if we're just coughing up words that we've learned from A Course in Miracles or from Buddhism or anything else, we probably did not go deep. We probably stayed in the intellectual mind. It's the intellectual mind that is answering. When you go down into a really deep contemplation, again, something unique. You may even find yourself using your own words that you've never heard anyone else use before. Someday you may be excited when you want to cost somebody else using the same word and say, oh, look, that's the word that came to me for that. Yeah, that's the word I was feeling as well. But still, when it comes up in you, it has a uniqueness. As Barb is saying, it's coming from a level that is deeper than the intellect. It's deeper than the learning that you did with the course. You know, if you were just at the intellectual level, or the learning you did in Buddhism, if you were just at the intellectual level, or the learning you did from Ramana Maharshi. You know, we often hear the term parroting. You know, they're just parroting Ramana Maharshi or just parroting the course. That's when we're just at the intellectual level and it hasn't come from a deep, deep realization. Now you're asking, could meditation be a preparation for contemplation? That's a possibility. For some people, meditation comes first, then contemplation comes later. For some people, contemplation may come first. It may lead to meditation. Some people may contemplate and not meditate. Some people may meditate and not contemplate. And some people may do both. I meditate one day, contemplate another day. You know, so there are no rules. You know, we want to let go of our rules of the world, including our spiritual rules. You know, if anybody tells you, you have to meditate 30 minutes a day, that's a rule. You know, really, you should be meditating when you feel the prompt to meditate, and you should be staying in meditation for as long as you feel to stay there, right? That's following guidance. That's what we learned tonight from Inner Ramana. We want to let go of our rules of the world. We want to let go of our rules of spirituality, and we want to tune in. You know, if you are a course student and you have finished the course workbook, then you know at the end of the course workbook, we are told that this curriculum or this path is highly individualized. Where do you think that highly individualized aspect comes from? It comes from your personal guidance, right? So that's what we're all here to do. We're all here to learn our own inner intuition that is guiding us to awakening. We want to forget all rules. We may listen to others and we may recognize that something they're saying is right for me, but that recognition comes from within me. Every one of us is here to get to know and learn to follow our own inner self or our own inner intuition. And with that, I am done. I'll be back Tuesday morning, however, this week for prayer circle. And I will be back Wednesday morning this week as admin. But yeah, then I'm off to India. So after that, I will see you guys on December 1st for the Awakening Together gathering in the morning. Have a wonderful November. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Regina.